This is the Michael E. Gerber Show. Big voices in small business. And now here's your host, Michael E. Gerber.
Good morning, everybody. It's Michael E. Gerber, and it's the Michael E. Gerber Club. I'm delighted to be with you again. Of course, we do on this meeting everything we can possibly do to engage you in a conversation, to help you to see and understand better what it is you hope to do, to bring you to a higher place than you've ever been, to transform your state of mind about what business is and what business isn't, and why, in fact, this is the age of the new entrepreneur, despite the fact that most of us haven't realized it yet, that in the age of the new entrepreneur, the relationship with business, the relationship with a commercial enterprise, the relationship with money, relationship with meaning, is significantly enlarged and expanded beyond anything it's ever been in a commercial enterprise before. And of course, that's my mission. That's my dream. That's my vision. That's my purpose. That's the reason I'm here. That's the reason I'm doing this. And as you begin to experience what the Michael E. Gerber Club is all about, you begin to opt in or opt out, as the case might be, all for the reason that you're going to be getting something here different than you're going to be getting anywhere else. The voice of our mission, the voice of not Michael Gerber, but the voice of the dream and vision of what we're here to do, to awaken the spirit of an entrepreneur in every single human being on the face of the earth, to the degree that that is possible to be done, and I believe it is, we will here enter into the dreaming room and to begin the conversation about what it means to have a dream, what it means to have a vision, what it means to have a purpose, and what it means to have a mission, and how each and every one of those active verbs are truly related to a continuous, contiguous, inspirational action that is critical if the spirit of entrepreneurship is to come alive in the way that I speak about it in my new book, Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, how ordinary people can create extraordinary companies, and without it being said, without any experience to guide them. How does one begin with nothing and create something? Well, that's the whole spirit of what we're here to do. I want to read something selflessly to you from the new book I just received from Harper called The E-Myth Enterprise, How to Turn a Great Idea into a Thriving Business. And the foreword was written by my friend Ken Blanchard. And I say I'm doing this selflessly. You'll just have to take my word for it. It says, I love to read Michael Gerber's books. His attitude is challenging. His style is playful. I don't know about that. And his content is insightful. I certainly know about that. His early gems, The E-Myth, E-Myth Mastery, The E-Myth Revisited, and Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, were pretty darn good, to say the least. But The E-Myth Enterprise might be his best book yet. Listen to what Michael has to say in his introduction. Trust me when I say this. The E-Myth Enterprise, as you will come in touch with here, are as uncommon a reality as winning the Olympics. Companies like these don't just happen. They are the outcome of passions intensely applied, of perseverance impossible to fake, of overcoming the relentless obstacles that are continually conspiring to make the impossible impossible, to make the unfathomable unfathomable, to make the difficult more than just difficult, but horrendously difficult, of creating an original result in the world. In short, a free market system provides one with significantly more opportunity to fail than it does to succeed. Ken Blanchard goes on to say, how's that for challenging? He points out later in the book, and this is me again, service is an incomplete word because it says the customer is king. But as it works out in real life, the customer isn't king except in the mind of the customer. To the employees, the customer isn't king. He's often a pain in the ass. To suppliers, the customer isn't queen. She's often a problem waiting to happen. To the lenders, the customer isn't king. He's often a drunk hanging onto a wagon, carooming into a wall. No, the customer isn't king to them. They are. Ken Blanchard goes on to say, how's that for playful? Throughout the book, Michael gets to the heart of what makes businesses tick. Back to the E-Myth Enterprise. There are three things that can be organized: time, space, and work. Despite what many believe and what most try to do, people cannot be organized. Only the work people do can be organized. All attempts to organize people instead of their work do exactly the opposite of what organization is intended to do. Rather than order, it creates chaos. Rather than ease, it creates dis-ease. Rather than efficiency, it creates boredom. Rather than flexibility, it creates bureaucracy. Rather than room, it creates confinement. When employed with skill, organization always produces a sense of great ease. When employed unwisely, organization always produces resistance. I have never seen a great business that does things in a business-like way. Ken Blanchard then goes on to say, thank you, Ken. How is that for insightful? Is the E-Myth Enterprise just for people thinking about starting a business? No, but it sure would help. I read this book in a plane from Dallas to San Diego. After finishing a page, I would hand it to my wife, Margie, who co-founded our company with me, and who has, by the way, a PhD in communication. She kept saying as she read, how do we get everyone in our company to read this book? We're celebrating the 30th anniversary of our company this year, and Margie is worried that we have what is called educational incapacity. Our success, and we have been successful, makes us blind to new learnings and ways of thinking. And boy, is the E-Myth Enterprise all about that. So read this book, Ken Blanchard says. Share it with your colleagues. And as Michael Gerber challenges us, stop sleeping. Wake up. Heed the final thoughts in this wonderful book by this brilliant, passionate man, Michael Gerber, who I am proud to call a new friend. A business with conscience. That is, I believe, the only mission worthy of the name. To create a world in which people are present, honest, open, and alive. To create a world in which people make conscious decisions in good conscience. That is what shooting for the moon is all about. And one cannot do it in one's sleep. It requires all we have, and it requires it now. Ken Blanchard, co-author of The 1 Minute Manager and The 1 Minute Entrepreneur, and co-founder and chief spiritual officer of the Ken Blanchard Companies. I thought I'd share that with you, and then I thought I'd read this to you, even though I've read it to you before, because I absolutely love it. And it's the preface to the E-Myth Enterprise, how Pig and Bear went into business. Pig and Bear decided to go into business. We'll make lots of money, they thought. Pig baked a bushel of potatoes, and Bear fried a heap of donuts. They went to the marketplace early in the morning to get the best spots. Nobody was around yet. The morning was clear and chilly. Bear had a nickel in his coat. After a while, he went over to Pig's stand to warm up a little. How much for a potato? He growled. A nickel for you, Pig said. Bear was about to say that he just wanted to ask, but then he changed his mind. He fished for the nickel in his fur, took the biggest steaming potato in his paws, and crossed the road back to his stand. The business is moving, rejoiced Pig. But since there were no more customers for a while, and he hadn't eaten since they started at dawn, he crossed over to Bear's stand and bought himself a black raspberry donut for a nickel. Bear was happy to have his first customer. He felt he should eat something before they started to flock. He went over to buy another baked potato. The move brought him luck. He had hardly finished when Pig was over for another donut. The business slacked off again until Bear bought a potato. Soon Pig was over again, and Bear went right back to his stand with him to spend the earned nickel. Pig returned for a donut, and soon they were going back and forth until they sold everything. They counted the money, but, "How strange, I only have a nickel," Bear said. "And I have nothing at all," said Pig. They couldn't believe it. "We have sold all our merchandise," they kept saying, "but we have no money." But in vain, they counted and recounted. They had only a nickel between them after the whole day of busy trading. Adapted from 12 Iron Sandals by Vit Hovjes. I think that's an extraordinary story. I've heard it told and told and told and told again over the years as we've been working with small business. That's strange. We have only a nickel between us. What happened? What is it about us that enables us to go to work every single day the way we do, to increase the way we sell, to improve the way we market, to generate more and more and more clients, and yet, at the end, that's strange, we only have a nickel between us? Where did that nickel come from? But of course it came from Bear. And of course it ended up back in Bear's pocket. But he'd sold everything that he'd created, as had Pig. Now how is that possible? Every small business owner has always said, when working with E-Myth, when working with me in the Dreaming Room, when working with my partner in Certified Capital Advisors, how is that possible? Everybody says, where did the money go? So I want to talk to you about that, and I want to engage you in a conversation about that. But of course, I also want to engage you in a conversation about the subject which is nearest and dearest to my heart, which of course is the dream. Dreaming. What is a dream? What does a dream mean? What does meaning mean? What does life mean? What does your life mean as you use it up day after day after day after day? Is this about personal growth? This is not about personal growth at all. Hear me. This is the antithesis of personal growth. This is beyond personal growth. This is beyond money. This is beyond leadership. This is beyond management. This is beyond selling. This is beyond anything and everything we each and every one of us think about every day as we go to work, consumed by the detail of all the stuff you and I have to do. I've got to do it. I've got to do it. I don't have any other time to do it. I've got to do it now, because if I don't do it now, then I'll never get it done. And if I never get it done, then my company isn't going to grow. But then the question becomes, so why in the world would you want your company to grow? Is it really necessary that your company grow beyond where it is? But if your company doesn't grow, then what in fact does that say about your company? Does it say that in fact you're not truly doing something that is truly value to the people you're doing it for? What does it mean when slow growth or no growth comes a conversation? So all of these issues are issues I'd like to speak to you about. And when we're done, before we're done, perhaps some of you, one of you, all of you, will have a answer to a question that was the most important question you could possibly ask, and then who knows what. So there we go. So here I am. So what would you like to talk about? Press *7 to unmute yourself. And then when you're done, please press *6 to mute yourself again.
Hi, Michael.
Yes.
It's Tracy from Canada. How are you again?
No kidding, Tracy. Give me a break. Is it you, Tracy, again?
It's me again. I just can't get enough of you.
Well, what can I tell you? Tracy, you're always the first one to ask a question.
I am. I have four questions.
Which is very, very delightful to me. So good. So ask your four questions.
Thank you so much for reading from the E-Myth Enterprise. It's absolutely wonderful. I can't wait to get the book. As we are in the Dreaming Room, I have a dream. I'm glad to be here today with you because I'm having a devil of a time to get my people to reach my dream. Up here in Canada, I've got my trucking company, and I'm a specialized carrier, but I like to specialize in the big, the bad, the bold, and the beautiful, where people don't like to touch it because they don't know how to move it. And what I've done recently, I've changed my strategies because I'm trying to bring all my people up with me in following the dream. I've shared with them my vision, my mission statement, our strategic objective. Everybody knows that we're doing the E-Myth right to the end. And in the last week, I've been completely dumbfounded and disappointed with the gentleman that answers my phone being my dispatcher type person. And he says, Tracy, he says, we had this call. He says, you know, somebody wants us to move this great big thing. We're not set up for it. So I told him he'd have to call this other company. I told him, I said, well, did you not ask questions? Whenever you run into something like that, maybe forward it on to me. He says, what would you even do? He says, you're going in a market you don't know anything about. He says, and you're crazy to even go there. I said, but you're avoiding the mission and the dream that we're trying to get to. I said, this is where we want to go. And I said, if the phone is starting to ring, it's where I want to be. He says, but you're going somewhere. He says, you haven't got the drivers, the employees to do the work that you're trying to chase. I said, but at least if I sit there and ask these people questions, maybe they'll help us and I can help them get into the area where I'd like to be, but not where we are now. So my question to you this morning, Michael, is how do I achieve this dream without the manpower behind me to find out where I'm going to get to do what I need to do to get there?
Well, first of all, understand that the dream is the great result. The dream isn't what you do today. The dream is what you are designing your company to do when it's finally done. The dream will, of course, become a plan. Plan will be realized in your mission. So you've not been to the dreaming room, Tracy. You haven't experienced the logic and the dynamic of moving from a dream to a vision to a purpose and to a mission. And so you're in one way misinterpreting what in fact you're really saying to the people in your company. On the other hand, what absolutely is missing in the conversation you had, and what is the name of the gentleman you were speaking to, his first name?
His first name is Art.
Yeah, Art. Art, I love what you're saying because it demonstrates to me that you really care about our company. You truly care about me. You truly care that we don't step into something that we can't handle, that we're not prepared for. I absolutely respect what you're saying, Art, and I want to thank you for demonstrating to me how much you do care. On the other hand, what's absolutely essential in this conversation is that you understand that our purpose is to create a system through which we can begin to better understand what the opportunities are and what they're not, why they are opportunities and why they're not opportunities, and if they are opportunities, why we must pursue them deeper, further than we've ever pursued them before, and if they're not opportunities, why we must do exactly the same thing to truly begin to understand the difference between an opportunity and a prospective problem, and what in fact great companies do to seize the day to turn what might look like a huge problem into the truly great opportunity it is. So what I need from you, Art, and I need you to do that today, is I need you at lunch or at your break, I need you to write down the questions that we would ask if in fact we were determined to discover what's true about what is being asked of us. That's all we want to know. What's true about it? Not what you think is true about it, Art. Not what I think is true about it, Art. Not what the prospective customer might think is true about it, Art, but what is actually true about it. Because if all we do is to operate from where we are with the beliefs we have and the opinions we've got about those beliefs, we're never going to be anything other than what we are today, Art. And that's completely unacceptable to me, and as I understand it, it's completely unacceptable to you as well. So, one, I want to thank you for doing what you've done, And two, I want to tell you what we need to do. And by the end of the day, I want to see exactly what you believe it would sound like as you're asking the right questions for the reasons that I've just stated. Does that make sense, Art? Does that make sense, Tracy?
It does. It does. It makes a lot of sense to approach it completely different. I think that's terrific.
Okay, so suddenly you begin to see, thank you, Art, and I really appreciate that. And I'm not saying that cynically. I'm not saying that disingenuously. I'm saying that seriously because I do want to thank Art for that. Art is looking out for me. On the other hand, Art doesn't know enough to look out for me. Art is looking out for me based upon what Art believes a problem is, based upon what Art's philosophy is, based upon what Art's experience is. Art has never built a world-class company. Art has never done what we're talking about doing, but of course, you haven't either. So now what we're doing is we're engaging in a process, Art and I, to build a company that we can't even imagine at this point in time, what it will look like, how it will act, what it will feel like, and what the financial implications of it are. And so you understand, you're beginning a dialogue with Art, first by accepting what he said, second by readjusting his belief, attitudes, and opinions about the role he's to play. And by doing that, I'm getting exactly what I want, and I'm getting it right then and right there and right in the moment. The beauty of this is, what also just occurred, not only for you, Tracy, but for every single person on this call, is we've just created a script. So you suddenly have, thank you, blank, and the words go on. And you suddenly see that's a system. And that's what eMyth is all about. And that's what the Dreaming Room is all about. And that's what the pursuit of the impossible is all about. And that's the response to your question. So what's question number two?
That's lots right there. That's terrific.
Good.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Did you say you had another question, Tracy? Okay, so let's go on. Star 7. Who else has a question? Who else has got a problem? Who else has got a frustration? Who else has got Art working for you? Who else has got somebody who doesn't understand what you mean when you say A or B or C or D? Every single one of you does. So please, bring it to me. Bring it to me right now, because that's what the Michael Gerber Club is all about, to give you a completely new frame of reference to everything you do in your company every single day. Whether it has to do with money, whether it has to do with people, whether it has to do with marketing, whether it has to do with the pursuit of the impossible, whether it's just getting through the day, whether it's being depressed, whether it's being awake, whether it's being you, whether it's being somebody else, understand that's what we're here to address. Everything that nobody else addresses with, other than through the same stupid ideas that exist everywhere we look. Hear me, you're going to create an original company. And that original company is going to create it because you're asking the right questions for the right reason in the right way. And that's what we're here to do. So Star 7, who's the next folk who has got a question, got a frustration, got a concern, has got a thought, got an idea, or whatever and so forth that we can talk about?
Bill Tucker?
Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Bill, are you always number two to Tracy's number one?
Yeah, I just wait for Tracy, and then I
go down right then after. I got Bill. It's perfect. You're absolutely programmed. What's happening?
Hey, man. Well, I've been doing a lot of work with this, my business, with what we're doing. Let me just tell you my dream again. Large manufacturing facility, assembly line for refurbishing copiers, but I get these broken people from like rescue missions and things like that.
Yep.
And I have an unlimited pool of people, see, because there's a lot of them people, right?
There's an unlimited pool of broken people. You got to believe,
right.
you absolutely know that to be true.
And, yeah. Well, what I have to do is I have to train these people to rebuild the copiers.
Yep.
And I've been thinking, I think what I haven't been, I'm past dreaming now, and I'm thinking, how am I going to make this happen? I'm starting to get kind of worried. Like, where am I going to find a place for each person? I'm starting to think of how I'm going to pull this off, you know. Like, here's my question, I guess. Am I shortchanging my dream if I start, like, slowly, maybe train one or two people first?
No, you always start with training one or two people first. But I want to correct something you said just a moment ago. You said that your dream is to train people, broken people with broken lives, how to fix copiers.
Well, actually, it's actually to help their, we're to heal broken people. That was the dream,
right.
Really.
That's the dream, to heal broken people. And to heal broken people, you have to provide them with the inspiration, education, training, coaching, mentoring, the system that's absolutely essential for a broken person with a broken life to become unbroken.
What
I call that,
is,
if you remember in my book, have you read Awakening the Entrepreneur Within?
Yes.
Yes. And in the Entrepreneur Within, Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, and I think I said this to you before, there's a story about Manny Espinosa and A Course for Heroes.
Yes.
And if you read that story, and if you read that chapter, each and every one of you, please do that, you'll see that, in fact, it's a template for exactly what you want to do. The content isn't there. Understand, I'm giving you the form of it, the template of it, the language of it, the inspiration of it, the idea of it. But the reality, then, is that is your job to create A Course for Heroes. And that is the conversion, the transformation of a broken life into a holy, redeeming, productive life that is not sufficient unto itself, but is obviously then capable of taking your modality, your model, your Course for Heroes, in quotes, and bringing it to other people. So as each and every one of your broken people becomes less and less and less broken, or put in another more positive way, more and more whole and fulfilled, they're moving up the ladder. And one of the rules of your course is that everybody reaches behind themselves and pulls somebody else up the ladder behind them. And so every broken person whose life is now being transformed is accountable for, in your system, to bring another person, another broken person, another person just like they used to be, up the ladder behind them. So everybody is reaching up and everybody is reaching back. Because if they don't reach back and only reach up, it only becomes self-serving. And that's not what the age of the new entrepreneur is all about. It's reaching up and it's reaching back. It's reaching up and it's reaching back, because the fulfillment comes from providing wholeness to whatever degree that's possible to every person on the face of this earth. You get to do that. And you use fixing, what do you call them?
Copiers.
Copiers as the modality through which the income part is handled. So you see, it's simply the method to your madness. And how do we do this? How do we afford to do this? How do we support this? We all make a living doing what? Fixing copiers. And it could be anything. You understand, it just happens to be copiers because that's what you know how to fix. Could be anything. Could be printers. Could be computers. Could be fishing ponds. Fish ponds, rather. Could be anything. Doesn't matter what it is.
Can I kind of go back to your book and ask you kind of the same question, but a different way?
Of course.
In that book, you had, it's like a six-month course that you had. And I was thinking, well, if I had a six-month course, there would be no finance. I wouldn't have any money for 6 months. I mean, and I don't think it takes that long to train them on copiers.
No, it's, but you understand the difference between the course of heroes that I talked about in the book and the program that you're developing. You have to understand the difference between the two. No, I'm not saying that they wouldn't be producing income from the very beginning. They would. So the program you're going to develop includes both sides of that coin. One, the income generator absolutely has to be critical, but that income generator can only be where they enter the process, what that you're capable of teaching them how to do. Let me give you a perfect example of that. At eMyth Worldwide, we decided we were going to license our coaching capability to deliver the eMyth Mastery program to our clients. And I knew that I could attract people to become business coaches. But the problem is I had to get them ready to coach a client very, very quickly. Because I couldn't wait until they learned all the stuff they needed to learn in our eMyth Mastery program, which comprises 21 modules on leadership, marketing, money, management, lead generation, lead conversion, client fulfillment. I couldn't wait 3 years before they started to actually begin coaching. I had to get them coaching right away. So what did we do? Because our program, the eMyth Mastery program, starts with benchmark one, module one, process one in module one, and then upon completion of process one, the client completes process two in module one, and the completion of process two, they complete et cetera and so forth. What obviously I could do is to spend a significant amount of our energy at the very beginning gauging this eMyth coach in the mindset that was absolutely essential, the point of view that underlies the whole eMyth principle and programmatic way of doing what we do. And once having done that, I could then teach them how to deliver process one, process two, and process three. And then they could get their first client. Why? Because their first client must first do process one, and only then do process two, and only then do process three. And while they're delivering process one and waiting to deliver process two, our eMyth coach is now learning, just like the client would learn it, on the telephone, long distance, fax, modem, mail, and conversation, process four, process five, process six. So they're generating income, and yet they have absolutely no knowledge of all of the processes yet to come. They're learning it just before they deliver it. So that strategy enabled us to start up very, very quickly. And the coach, licensee, would pay us a license fee. Become a certified eMyth consultant. And that's what we did. And the beauty of it was just in time. So what's your just in time model?
Yeah, that's the question.
Well, and that's all you have to do. You have to ask that question and then answer it. My answer was first this, then that, then that, then that. And your answer is going to be something exactly similar to that. I don't know what it is. I don't know how it works. But effectively, what I do know is that a beginner is an apprentice, and I don't have him doing the work of a craftsman or the work of a master. I have him doing absolutely only the most limited things that he would absolutely be able to do after 1 week of training. So if you think of the assembly line, the production line the repair line, you would then have to ask the question, so what is, in relationship to our system, your system, step one that every beginner must learn how to do? That then the guy who has already been through step one doesn't have to do any longer because a beginner is doing it. It's a system.
Yeah.
It's a process.
I've actually got things in place. I've already spoke with the rescue mission, and everybody's, you know, positive attitude about it, wanting to work with me, and so I mean it's. I'm not saying tomorrow I'm going to start, but it's not going to be that far off. So it's kind of getting scary.
Well, of course it's scary, but it's always scary.
Yeah, it is.
Always scary. You're going into a world you've never been in before. It's always scary. Everybody in this call, if they're really honest, will tell you it's scary. And so what do? They don't pursue the dream. Instead, they become, their mind becomes fog-bound and makes it impossible for them to truly transcend the situation, to begin to create what is absolutely essential for the situation to work. This is your job. You have got to design that system.
And so going back to my first question, so starting slowly with one or two people, like train them first, that's probably the best way to go. Not because I was thinking, man, to get all these people, and then where do I put them? And
No. You're building your franchise prototype. You're building it from the very, very smallest so that you can learn how to do what you're committing to do. And you're going to build it as you go.
That's what I thought, you know?
You're going to build it as you go. You're going to start with one guy, and you're going to learn something, and you're going to document it. And then you're going to go on to the second and third and the fourth guy, and you're going to learn something, and you're going to document it. And then you're going to go on to the fifth guy and the sixth guy and the seventh guy. In the meantime, there is a place for the first guy, the second guy, the third guy, the fourth guy, the fifth guy, the sixth guy, and the seventh guy, because you've designed it that way. So all of the questions that you need to sit down and ask are what you need to ask. How do I start this? What does my prototype look like? What does the practice look like? Where are these people going to work? How are these people going to earn their keep? How am I going to generate enough business to satisfy the need that I have to provide work for these people and a school for these people to come to so they can begin to learn how to become whole? It's not just the income. It's not just the income. It's not just the ability to earn a living. It's not just that that's important to them. The question becomes then, what is going to be taught in your school? What are the essential skills that a whole person has that a broken person doesn't? What is the difference between a whole life, a productive life, and a broken life, and an unproductive life? Got it?
Yes.
Okay.
That's great.
So there you go. So that's the beginning.
Thank you, Michael.
That's the beginning. My pleasure. So now we've heard from Tracy and Bill, as you would all expect, anybody who's been in the Michael Gerber Club call before. They're obviously actively determined to grow a great company. And they obviously, and every day, come up against this absolutely clear and compelling reality, I don't know how to do that. And then we get depressed. And then we get lost. And then we become overwhelmed. But the Michael Gerber Club says all of that depression, all of that overwhelm, all of those obstacles that come in your way are simply part of the program. They're part of the course. They're part of the problem. Every single one of us have that. I'm here to provide you with the inspiration, the education, the training, the coaching, the mentoring, the whatever you want to call it, and the systematic way of seeing what it is you're there to do in a completely different and significantly more productive way to create and add and support meaning in this world. The good work, that's what you're here to do, each and every one of you. What is your good work? What are you here to do? What's keeping you from doing it? What's standing in your way? That's the conversation. Star 7, who's next? Oh, come on, you're all there. Something's got to be buzzing. Something's got to be going on at home. Something's not working. Hello.
Hi, Michael. This is Ed Baker.
Hey, Ed Baker, how are you? You're always the third one, Ed. You're either the third one or the fourth one, but you're always asking a question. What's your question, Ed?
Okay, we're working on putting a website up so we can sell the algae. And how do we develop a script that we can know sells is better than another script? How do you do that?
Well, first of all, you ask yourself the question, what do you want to say? To whom are you saying it? What do they want? What's missing in their picture? What is the problem they've got? And then you write a script as surely as you were standing next to that guy and telling him.
Okay.
And you write it. You just write it. That's all you do. And then you say it. You say it to Hugh. Hugh says it to you. You say, Hugh, there's something wrong with that. Instead of that, why don't you say, and Hugh says to you, Ed, there's something wrong with that. Instead of doing that, why don't you say this? And you get the best script you can get, and then you try it. And when you try it, that's the innovative part of the process. The next thing is quantification. So you remember in E-Myth, I talk about innovation, quantification, and orchestration. No mystery to all this. You then get the script, and you use the script. Use the script every chance you get, always exactly the same way, every chance you get. And when you use the script, you suddenly get a question, you suddenly get an objection, you suddenly get a concern, you suddenly get a frustration, and you write that down. And at the end of the day, you and Hugh, to everybody else, you and Ed are partners in a new algae company that's going to break through barriers that nobody's ever broken through before. When you get through the day, you review all of the questions that were asked that didn't have an answer to, and that night you write the answer. And you add that to your manual, your sales manual, with your selling script, that you use exactly and faithfully every single day until you improve it. And you improve it because you're quantifying the impact of it. Okay, we got 42 calls, we got 10 sales. That's a hell of a day.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So instead of that, you might have 42 calls and 3 sales. So what's missing in this picture? What happened in benchmark 1 of the process? What happened in benchmark 2, et cetera, and so forth? So you improve upon the script, and you test it. And when you test it, you quantify the impact of the newly improved, supposedly, script. And it's either producing more or it's producing less. If it's producing less, you scrap the change. If it's producing more, you add that to the script, and you suddenly have improved upon the script, and you throw away everything else. And gradually what happens, Ed, exactly the same way you guys sat there in your laboratory building your algae producer. You tested it, you validated it, it either worked or it didn't work. If it worked, it worked this much more. You saved what worked, you trashed what didn't, and you continually improved upon it. It's exactly what you do with your marketing, with your lead generation, with your lead conversion, with your client fulfillment. You're building a template, a model. And that's how you do it.
Okay.
Now, you might not write the script. You might get somebody else to write the script. You might hire somebody who's a scriptwriter to write the script. Not just a scriptwriter, but a scriptwriter who knows selling and knows how to write a selling script and has created selling scripts successfully before. And in that way, you're delegating the accountability as opposed to simply doing it yourself. In the beginning, I would suggest to you and your partner that you do it yourself. There's
okay.
nothing more joyful than discovering, as you write this script, that the little sucker works. And as the little sucker works, obviously, the next thing that you're going to need to do is have somebody come in and use the script and do what you were doing before them. And then you move up, and you're now the sales manager. And you got a turnkey system, not only for making algae, but for selling algae. And on and on and on and on and on. And it's really that simple. If you do it.
Yeah, well, we're going to do it.
Okay, you got it.
Okay,
so thank you. Who else has got a question?
Michael, it's Bart.
Hello, Bart. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
I like to hear that. You've known, I have a vision for a while and have kind of attained that in my local area of Southern California and Southern Nevada. I'm having an issue now with, I just got the opportunity to take on one product line for the whole United States. So I've always had a vision to become, and have kind of attained that, to become the specialty contractor for this area in my product lines. Now I'm recognizing a new challenge to take the opportunity that I have, a national distributorship, and become a recognized leader for the whole United States. But maintaining one versus the other is starting to rip me apart. So not only with trying to maintain, and you know that I have instilled and installed your processes in my business, which has afforded me the ability to be able to go to that business on Friday and meet with my managers and stuff. I mean, I'm a graduate of the EMITH Academy also, for some of the people on the call. I'm having a hard time getting between both of them, not only with my management, but also with money, too. Like getting from one banker saying, okay, well, gee whiz, you're doing so well over here. Why would I want to take a risk, you know, going over here? So I guess I've got a dual prong. One is taking one step out of one company into another that's could be either good or bad, but that's just what life is. And also, you know, sort of where's the beef? Where's the money now? Some of the money, some of the other areas, non-standard areas to raise capital.
Well, so what you've done is started a new business. And
I've added on to an existing corporation that I've always had that's been like a nothing thing. It's been for me only. I'm adding into that saying, okay, fine, yes, like, okay, probably
yeah, so,
starting a new business.
So, but hear it in this way. It's how you relate to this opportunity and the one that you've worked on for years and developed as you have for years to the point where it is giving you everything that you had ever hoped it would give you. You're now taking on a startup. You're beginning a new company. And I want you to imagine your corporation called Holco, W-H-O-L-E, capital C-O, Holdco, that's the holding company, now has two divisions. Two divisions are Oldco, that's the company that you've worked on and mastered and developed. I don't know what the financial reality of that company is. I don't know how successful you are in that company, Bart. We haven't talked about that for years. But my presumption is that it's doing very, very well. It's giving you the life that you'd like. But you are an entrepreneur, Bart.
Yeah.
You had an entrepreneurial seizure one time back, and it almost killed you.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
That's part of the recuperation process that I've also been recuperating through these two corporations that I have also. So it's, you know, it's time now to maybe have another seizure, maybe not. But I think this is the, you know, as they say, big one, Elizabeth, so...
Well, but here it is. But it's not the same company as the company you've got. It's a new company, and you have to start it exactly like that. And so now you have to split your attention. But of course, because your attention with Old Co., which is the company that you've successfully turnkeyed and delivers product locally and so forth and so on, is working and is working as well as you would want it to work. I'm presuming that. I'm not saying it's true.
I don't think they ever are, but you can always, you know, get in and work, fine-tune it. But, yeah, it's pretty much in cruise, you know.
Yep. So what I'm saying now is you have to start the new company. You start the new company with a dream, a vision, a purpose, and a mission. It is not the old company. It doesn't do what the old company does. It's selling, it's distributing a product to other companies around the country. You're not in the retail business. You're not in a retail business. You're in a wholesale business.
I wrote down a vision and a mission and some values.
But hear me. Hear me. Let's not talk about what your vision is or what your values are or whatever and so forth. Let's just talk about the fact that this is division two of your whole company, which is the holding company of the two companies now that exist. The one company is the old company that has been doing, that's just doing well, 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 well. The new company is a startup. You've got the right to distribute this product, as I hear you, nationally. What is it going to call for you to do that? What is the process by which you develop the means to do that? What is the capital that's called for to develop the means to do that? What is the organization chart of NewCo in order for you to develop the means to do that, the people to do that? And all of the questions that you had to ask at the very beginning of OldCo have to be asked anew. What is my strategic objective? What is my primary aim, rather? What is my strategic objective? What is my organizational strategy? What is my management strategy? What is my people development strategy? What is my marketing strategy? What is my systems strategy? You need to begin again exactly the same thing you did with Old Co. Again, this is a presumption on my part, with New Co. You can't simply short shrift it. And that's the thing that we always make the mistake about. And that's the mistake that was made with your last entrepreneurial winding. You were so excited by the opportunity, you missed all of the elements that you should have seen when you started it. That there was no sound organizational strategy, that there was no sound management strategy, that there was no system in place for doing this and doing this and doing this and doing this. There was just this great opportunity. And you put money into it and your soul into it and you abdicated accountability for it and you got screwed over. Pretty much the long and the short of it. So with this new opportunity, you have to start with a blank piece of paper and beginner's mind all over again. And what I'd suggest you do, even though I know the problem with this, is you come to the dreaming room and you really, really, really engage in it. And do it right. Because if you do not do it right, you'll end up hating the fact that you ever got this national license.
Michael?
Yeah.
This part. I don't know, you were talking for a while. I could hear nothing at all, but I'll pick it up on the recording.
You couldn't hear it?
My line went completely dead. Sorry, and I know it's...
Bart, see what I mean, Bart? You see how this thing works? You better get it on the recording.
I will.
Your life is at stake. Your life is at stake, Bart. Listen to the recording.
I will, for sure.
Okay. I love you. Take care.
Thank you. Go ahead to somebody else. I'll mute my phone again. Sorry.
Okay. Did everybody get that? Don't you think that was really, really convenient that Bart's phone went dead just when I'm sharing with Bart absolutely what he needed to hear to prevent him from making a mistake of a lifetime? Now, I don't know how these things play themselves out, but it seems they always do. They always do. They always do. Anybody else? One last question.
The good news is it's there for posterity, so I'll be able to pick it up. Now I'm muting myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. One last question. Quickie. Come on, guys. This ain't high school. This ain't college.
Michael, it's Tracy again.
Yes, yes, Tracy.
Nobody else wants to talk, so I'm going to pick your brain.
it's just absolutely astonishing to me. It's just absolutely mind-blowing to me. But it will happen, and will continue to happen. So this will be Tracy's club. Go on, yes.
Tracy and Michael, the Ed, the Bill, the Bart. You know, it's all our club. We always seem to be the one talking. Is there any way that you can get us all hooked up so that we can talk in between our sessions? Because
I think there's a lot that
Ed, Bill, and Bart and myself, we can all talk about, because there's just so many things I want to tell them, and there's so many things I want to ask them that you can share with all of us, and we can sort of
absolutely
work together.
And that's going to be part of the membership in the Michael Gerber Club. You'll be able to connect with each other. You'll be able to share information. You'll be able to do all these things, and we're all on the way to do that.
Okay, terrific. That's all I
so
wanted
good.
To tell us.
So thank you, Tracy. Thank you, Bart. Thank you, and so forth and so on. And John Hayes, thank you. I'm glad you finally realized that you were at a Michael E. Gerber Club meeting. John Hayes will introduce you to everybody else, and one day everybody else will know who you are, and that'll be incredible. It's John P. Hayes, Ph.D., and John P. Hayes is working with me to make the Michael E. Gerber Club something you will not anyone who's on this call actually believe. It's going to be stupendous. So thank you. I'm taking off. I love you all. See you the next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Michael E. Gerber Show. Big voices in small business.